All right, so we're going to get started. Can you introduce yourself? Tell me your name, age, nationality, and how long you've lived or worked in Lewiston.
Hey, my name is Tinan Melissa Hugh. I am 31 years old. I am originally from the Ivory Coast, raised in North Carolina, and I've worked in Lewiston for about a year and a half.
Okay. And so, can you tell me a little bit more about your relationship to Lewiston? Like, how and why did you come, and what's that been like?
Yep, so I came to Lewiston by a job. Okay. I used to work at MaineHealth. At that time, MaineHealth got its first DEI director.
Okay.
And he was great. And then my director at the time saw the job, sent it over, and I was just like, why not? It was the first of its kind in the state of Maine.
Oh.
On a municipal level. And I always wondered how diversity, equity, and inclusion would play out in government, in like local politics, because you're not dealing with only health, you're dealing with like social issues and politics at the same time. And so interviewed in Lewiston, and they decided to take a chance on me, and then I got the opportunity to learn the community intentionally, learn the local organizations, learn why there was such a huge racial ethnic issue, and understanding the plight of immigration to Lewiston.
Right.
So.
Okay. So you mentioned about learning the community intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Had you known about Lewiston, or what did you know about Lewiston before, you know, going there for work?
Yeah, so I went to school at University of New England, and I did my undergrad and grad, so I was there for about 8 years.
Okay.
And there was a stigma always attached with Lewiston. I never actually went to Lewiston until that point, and it was coined as the Dirty Lou.
Mm-hmm.
And there were issues there, and one reason why I wanted to stay away is a haunting story that people tell all the time, where a group of anti-Somali people went and rolled a pig's head into the mosque. And that signaled to me, we just don't, not only do we not do different religions, but we don't do black people. So, no need to go.
Yeah. And, so tell me a little bit more about the work that you do. So you do DEI work, but you do it specifically in Lewiston. So can you tell me about the work that you do, like, in the context of Lewiston?
Yeah. So the job description itself is to reevaluate policies, reassess them, create new ones, give out trainings to employees, and do a lot of external community engagement work. So it's like half and half. And that, as I'm describing it, needs a team of people to do.
Okay.
The way it manifested in Lewiston, per se, because you never going go into a community and not learn the community before you decide to create anything for the community, was that Lewiston has a lot of nonprofit organizations that are black-led. The biggest differential is that these nonprofits seem to have a limited barrier. So what was wrong with that system there? And then I wanted to learn a little bit more about the community, who's leading them. And understanding that, I understood that there was a siloed effect taking place. And I always like go back to history and the time of like slavery and how that blueprint was written to understand what's happening right now. And what it looked like was something that we've seen time and time again, if you're familiar, is that you create a create competition inside communities that you want to dominate. And this is probably absolutely unintentional. There's no malice intent in doing it. But when we are talking about nonprofits searching for funds, it automatically creates that competition. And people are like fighting for $1,000 when there's $100,000 there that they don't know about, due to lack of education, due to lack of awareness, or just plain ignorance to the situation. But we keep them in this pool, and they end up competing against each other and fighting with each other instead of working together. Now, to this point, Lewiston and other nonprofits have done a good job, bigger nonprofits, philanthropy organizations, of like creating collaborative efforts to shift that narrative. But that was one of the key things that I saw in Lewiston that probably needed to be resolved.
Wow. That, I think, is really interesting on a lot of levels. But one of the things that I've noticed you sort of using the word of community a lot, like learning the community and the communities that are in Lewiston. How do you define community?
That's a tall order.
I know. It's a big question.
Oh,
gosh. It's a big question.
I mean, I think community is what you make of it, but fundamentally, I define community as family. So you don't necessarily have to like all your family members, but right. You deal with them and you have their back no matter what. They don't necessarily have to look like you, but you understand that they're kin to you. So that's what community looks like to me, and that's, I think, what community should look like in Lewiston, or kind of does. Mm-hmm. Lewiston is probably one of the most, or if the most diverse city in Maine. Portland, I'm sorry. But if you're saying that 47 to 50% of its youth are BIPOC community members, then that means 25% of the people living there probably would have to be of color.
Yeah.
And with that comes just a whole array of beauty and like color that comes to it and texture. And I think that's the great part about Lewiston. And trying to figure out a way where everybody views that texture and that difference as a part of their family is the hardest part to do. Because before then, previous to the Somali culture coming in and previous to the Angolans and everybody coming in, there was immigration, there was the KKK, there was all of that, but it was towards the Catholics and towards the Irish and towards people with the same complexion, and you have to talk to them to understand their differences. So now there's this new age phenomenon where, okay, now we visually see the differences, how do we accept?
Right. And so, you know, you talked about coming from an immigrant background, your family's from the Ivory Coast, and how do you think you've been received in Lewiston among, right, some of the communities that you work with?
I think I've been received well. I think coming from an immigrant background, being raised down south, I think just growing up in a dynamic where you have to kind of assimilate to all cultures has helped me a lot. Like, once you understand white culture, you know how to be a part of it, and you know how to work the system.
Right.
So that has been one of the fundamental foundations of how I move, technically.
Right. And you're here. Do you have, like, any other family members here, or is it just, like, you and Maine and, like, learning different Maine communities through your work?
It is just me. And I go home for a mental break. I go home to reset. I'm like, get me out of this bubble.
Right.
And you learn a lot. You learn a lot here. You learn a lot going down south, because it's the same battle. It just looks very, very different. And I always say Maine can be the shifting narrative of how we assimilate correctly, just because the population is so small when it comes to its BIPOC population.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I noticed, like, coming to Maine, right, as you said, right, the dominant narrative is typically a Somali narrative, but there's, right, lots of other folks from, like, all over, like, Africa, the Caribbean. Have you found other folks with, like, your similar, right, ethnic or national background in Maine?
Ivory Coast is a dime a dozen. We hang out down south and in New York. I've been here 10 years. There's only been one person from the Ivory Coast that I've met.
Really?
And I don't think they lasted too long, because you just want to be around that type of people.
Right.
So my nationality, personally, no, I haven't met.
Right.
If you know anybody, let me know. But other nationalities are just coming in by the dozen. And we talk about, like, people coming in from Haiti and Africa, and we have, like, probably one of the strongest Latin populations coming in, and they are just a hidden society in Maine, but they are thriving and surviving. We have a Filipino population. It's just all the cultures seem to be migrating to vacation land.
To vacation land. And in your experience with being here, have you kind of participated in any of, like, the traditions or customs or religious, like, practices as you've sort of learned any of the communities that you work with?
Participated in, no, not necessarily. I'm Catholic.
Okay.
My best friend is Muslim. She's Sudanese. So growing up, I've been to the mosque.
Right.
So it's just one of those that I'm just like, it'll come naturally if it comes. Right.
And I guess for yourself, like, personally, have you found, like, you know, like, a cultural community or religious community, if those things are important to you, that you think, like, align with, you know, your own interests or histories?
Yeah. So, I found a community because I went to school here. So, we just college friends, and they're still here, and they came from everywhere, and we were a small pool of people that grew up together in the whitest state ever, and we stuck together. I think my college had, gosh, maybe 27 black people out of 2,000. Shout out to you and me at the time. But it was just a small cohort, and we all knew each other, and we all hung out, and we still all know each other today.
Oh, wow.
So I have them to lean on, and I understand Maine well.
Yeah.
Adult culture, you just grow up with what you know, and you make more friends as you go. Mm-hmm. So that's my community.
Yeah.
And
this sort of a little bit of a shift. You started off sort of talking a little bit about politics, but can you tell me a little bit about how you participate in politics, or if politics plays a role in your life, either formally or informally?
I have a love-hate relationship with politics.
Okay.
I hate to love it, and I love to hate it. The job by design is not meant to be political, but it is.
Right.
I mean, you think about it. You think about equity. You're just like, why would this have anything to do with politics? You're just trying to give everybody access to opportunities, not access to free things.
Mm-hmm.
But it does. And I think DEI, especially when looking at the history of it, has been around for 65, 70 years. The first DEI technically would have been the ending of segregation and the allowing for black people to work alongside white people. That's the first workplace, hostile work environment that was ever created. And then after that, we've had the snowball effect into what it is today. And even then, it was political. It's the idea of creating or allowing access to those that you do not think have certain values that align with you, or you see yourself as being, see them as being a part of your tribe, is the issue. So then it becomes political, because you have people on the left and you have people on the right, and somewhere along the middle is the moderate truth, and anybody from a diverse background seems to be a casualty when it comes to these choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it time and time again.
Mm-hmm. And in Lewiston, like the time that you spent in Lewiston, have you seen, I don't know, either like this election cycle or anything sort of leading up to it, like the impact of politics in the communities that you work with at all?
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm going to be so honest. Politics is tricky, right? Politics is very tricky because it's so extreme on both sides. And you have to, and I look at it from the lens of how are you impacting your most vulnerable community, which at the end of the day would be your black immigrant, can't speak English community. Like, how are they thriving with a disability, who is transgender? How is that low-hanging fruit being impacted by the decisions from either party? And again, somewhere in the middle lies the truth. So if you're saying, well, you know, we have the history of immigrants coming in who were able to make something of themselves and hold themselves up by their bootstraps and all of these great things, and I'm just like, okay, that doesn't make any sense. You don't even give them boots to pull themselves up with. That's never going to happen. Well, here is free access to everything. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense, because you work in America. You thrive in America. If you're teaching people that they have to ask for a handout, you're not teaching them anything. You're not teaching a man how to fish. You're not teaching them about the struggle. So you are mentally causing harm. The other person is like tangibly causing harm.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere in the middle, we have to figure it out. So that's where I stand with the politics. And being here for 10 years and working in healthcare, I see like how detrimental that is on both ends. When you provide too much free access without education
mm-hmm.
to people, you're creating not necessarily people, but something that you can control. And when you provide zero access, then you're just starving people of opportunity. And I was just like, okay, in healthcare, I remember when I first started, we had a majority of U.S. citizens on our caseloads. Mm-hmm. And then after about a year and a half, it was only immigrants. Only immigrants. Select few U.S. citizens on the caseload. And you see the system change, and you're just like, whoa, how has it shifted so big, and where is the disconnect? But then you look at everything that's been added in between, and you're just like, okay, all of these little pockets of opportunities have been created. Do people have access to this education to move upward right. in the trajectory? Yes and no. And it was our job to educate people. And that's when I took the job, I was just like, oh, education has to be the foundation of everything. You can't do anything without educating the community. I don't care from where you come from. You have to know, one, the American system. Mm-hmm. Two, your resources. And three, your community, right. whether you like it or not.
Right. Can you speak a little bit more about like what that means or what that looks like to educate the community?
You know what? It's tough to educate people who know their culture better than you do. Mm. It's like educating your parents. Like, who are you to tell me?
Yeah.
Like, I raised you, and I'm like, Mom, you still don't know how to use an iPhone. Like, let me help you.
Right.
So when you have cultures who understand themselves better than you do, you never want to take that away. The issue is to create an environment where you're not taking away from the culture, but you're telling them, if you do anything to lead your community to a better life, one thing you should not do is attempt to self-segregate, aside from Maine, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And there's value in understanding the community and the history that you're a part of. There's value in understanding the Black experience, there's value in understanding the immigrant experience, and there's value in you teaching your experience. And so I think the biggest way we, at least my department, has chosen to educate communities is by having these great focus groups where people get to air out basically their dirty laundry, and we facilitate that. Like, I want to know, I want all the criticism. I want to know how bad it is. I want to know who you can't get in contact with. And then that, the community at the table, wherever you're from, gets to work together to create a solution and feel like they are a part of that solution. Because if you don't feel like you're a part of the solution, you're not gonna take part in it for too long.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing that we've attempted to do.
Oh, wow. And how have those gone?
And you have what you... The theme that I hear most in the focus group is, I have a dream. How do I accomplish it? Mm-hmm. And that's it. And once you figure out a pathway to that success, all the angst is gone. You helped me. I have a dream. Or I had a dream, and these are the barriers that didn't help me accomplish it. How are you going to do different by me? Mm. And those are the people. And then you have the, I'm just here to figure out how, like, what to do, where to go, what to maneuver. And then, since that's the biggest theme, I was just like, okay, we're not doing a very good job in Lewiston to create a clear pathway to opportunities that we have. Knowledge isn't being disseminated in ways that it should be. Mm-hmm. People have been here for 25 years and still can't speak the English language. Mm-hmm. Where's the disconnect? And if we know that language is access to everything, mm-hmm. and we're not creating quick, easy ways to make that happen, and other countries have figured out a way to teach English or their languages in higher rates than in America, then where it's a disservice, and why is it happening?
Right. And that, you know, sort of leads me to the next question I had about the role of language, right, in your work or in your life. It seems like it comes up with trying to sort of navigate communication with communities. Are there other ways that it comes up for you?
I think language is tough because Lewiston has a history of taking away language, and it saw the side effects of doing that. Like, yeah. Took away the French language.
Yeah.
Why? And people were absolutely angry. And it was a way to control people, right? And be in the know. Now, it seems to be on the flip side. We're not doing a very good job of teaching the English language. And I'm just like, okay, we can't go from one side. We're keep swinging this pendulum wherever we are from one side to the other. And we have to figure out a way to teach the English language quickly. And there are ways to do it. We just need to invest more time. Because, again, it's the old adage of teach a man how to fish. I can't. And I can, because my mother immigrated here too, but I can't imagine this time being dropped, which people are, on a bus from Texas to a shelter with a card that says, this is where I'm supposed to be, with four kids on my back, not knowing what to do. And what happens is, what I saw the minute I moved here is, when there is no understanding of language, there's no communication, and when there's no communication, you make up your own stories about people, and when you make up your own stories about people, you make decisions based off of that knowledge. You can walk past somebody, they don't know how to say hi to you, and they will look down and you will say, okay, these people hate us. They won't even make eye contact, not realizing that they don't even know the English language to say hi. And I think that's the crux of it. If people started with that basis, they'll be able to educate themselves better, or they'll have more access to resources that they didn't even know they could, or even better, they'll be able to advocate for themselves alone.
It's really insane, because I've heard actually that sort of specific example a lot, where sometimes like they won't say hi to me when I'm walking down the street. And it's one of those things, you know, well, you can also learn to speak another language. It's like, you're not walking on the street saying, like, assalamu alaikum, right, to people as well. And, like, that's also an option, right?
Yeah.
That we explore.
And I always say a smile and hand gesture is free. Like, why are we, you know, this person is probably coming from a different country, or is just not from Maine, knowing the demographic. And you see them, and you hope that they look at you and say hi. And I'm like, this is your territory.
Yeah.
It gives nothing to smile and be like, everybody knows that international language of a wave.
And so you've been in Maine for 10 years, you said, working in Lewiston for about a year and a half. So just sort of over that time, right, coming to Maine for 10 years, sort of hearing stories about Lewiston, then going to work there, having been there. Have you seen Lewiston change over that either year and a half working there, or seemed like it's changed, you know, from hearing about it 10 years and then kind of being there for a year?
100%.
Oh, 100%. Okay.
100%. I think Lewiston was, at the time when I moved here, nobody wanted to go. Or no person of color wanted to go. And then there were a couple of markers throughout Lewiston's time. I remember when the high school soccer team won that huge event, you know, sports brings everybody together. That was a marker. That was like an opening. And they're developing quicker. And it might be a byproduct of just everybody moving and people needing housing, but at the same time, people are taking this stronger focus towards Lewiston. And I think organizations in Lewiston have more so than not decided to embrace differences in ways that they haven't before, and that's great to see, whether it's in the healthcare that they're providing, the jobs that they're providing, the stores that you see pop up, the and different communities or cultures coming in. Yeah, and I think it'll grow more over time.
Okay.
I just am hoping for thoughtful gentrification because it's going to happen regardless. And the culture doesn't get taken away, because I think that's the most beautiful part of Lewiston. It's just, it's a melting pot right now.
And so I always, you know, end interviews by asking people, you know, is there anything that you think, right, needs to be said, or anything that I haven't asked that you think is, you know, important to add or consider in the conversation you've had?
I think when it comes to Lewiston, based off of, like, when I got here to where it is, people need to give the city more credit. Mm-hmm. You know, there's, like, this old lens that they keep adding to the city that is just not there, and it's just not true. There's so many viable resources. The city is very prideful, and it does a good job of protecting its traditions and its values in ways other cities do not. And I think with time, with growth, again, time heals a lot, but the way it's moving, it's going to have a competing edge over a lot of cities. It's taking the idea of, like, culture and music and color, and it's bringing it there. And I think Lewiston is sitting on the precipice of something really, really great, and people should dive in and lean into this.
Thank you. This is a perfect note.